hope you enjoy this message from South City C3, a location of C3 Church, Christchurch.
It's great to be here. I come from Arrow Leadership. I am from Christchurch. I got out before the earthquakes. 30-something years before the earthquakes, I left town. And one of the most challenging opportunities when I had to preach was actually at a Jubilee service at my old school. I went to Shirley Boys High. Anyone else go to Shirley Boys High? No, you don't even hardly know where it is there. Certainly in Auckland, you can't tell people you went to Shirley Boys. It sounds a bit wussy. But anyhow, I was speaking at our school 50th Jubilee. There was a Sunday service. And it was quite a challenge because people were there for all sorts of reasons. Some came because it was on the program. They managed to get up in time on Sunday morning, having had a few too many Saturday night. But it was on the program, so they went. Others went there because they were practicing Christians and going to church was something they regularly did. Others went there because they went to church Christmas and Easter and school unions. So I had to cater for those different groups. And I was also conscious that for many, it was an opportunity to share something from the scriptures. So those who weren't regular churchgoers would have an opportunity to hear from the word. And there are also some who came. I wasn't the best behaved boy in the class. I got my share of canings, as they used to do. In fact, I got far more than my share. I occasionally got caned for something that I hadn't even done, which was my homework. Anyhow, some who came along to see what this guy Grantham is like now, how's he turned out. So that was a bit of a challenge. Anyhow, it's lovely to be in Christchurch, where I grew up. Arrow Leadership Program, 8 years ago, began our first residential week. We take a bunch of young-ish Christian leaders, pastors and so on, for a two-year journey, those aged 25 to 40-odd, with some track record as leaders. So we started our first residential week with 17 enthusiastic young leaders. I've been chosen as a leader. Cool. People have recognised my natural abilities. I'm on this leadership program. Even though I'm pretty good right now, I'm on this program so that I'll be even better as a leader. God has really chosen me. Nobody said that to me, but I wonder how many were thinking deep down, I've been selected, I'm pretty good. So on the very first night, just to kick things off, we had three long-experienced pastors, well-recognized in the Christian community, share something of their ministry and their life as leaders. One told us how very early on in his long ministry, way back, he made a major mistake, which could have blown his ministry right out of the water there and then. Second one, long pastoral experience. He shared his convictions with us, his criminal convictions. He told us about what he'd done, dishonesty, charged in court, was all prepared when he went to court with a packed bag to go to jail. He didn't go to jail, but his ministry was not right in the guts. Large church, wonderful ministry. His wife was there with him this evening. She also was in ministry in the church back in that time. And she told us of her plans to leave him. He's done all this to us, got us thrown out of our work, home, church. And then she thought, hang on, if I leave him, I get the kids. I've got to do all that work on my own. So she thought, right, I'm staying with you and you'll do your share of the kids. He was publicly shamed and humiliated in the Auckland newspaper when his conviction and sentencing was announced, it was a big story like this. Pastor convicted of dishonesty. Same day, same town, there was a report of sentencing of someone who was convicted of murder. And it was just a small story. But pastor being convicted of dishonesty, that's a great story, big story, humiliating. He couldn't walk down the street without feeling embarrassed. Moved off to another church, and on Sunday mornings he would hide in the creche with kids, you know, he was there with his couple of his young kids. He couldn't face people. Great leader, shot right down because of failing. Since that time, he's returned as a significant Christian leader. He was a Baptist pastor. He went to, after doing his community service and further training, he came back into ministry, very humbled, and was called to a large Baptist church to be their pastor. They wanted a complete rundown on all that he had done. How would you like someone to ask you everything that you've done, or perhaps to read in the paper about what you've done? He's now in his third church, and he was dean of the cathedral in Wellington, which is like senior pastor of the big cathedral right next to Parliament. He has been restored in ministry. In Arrow Leadership, we don't start with all the amazing things that you are and the things that you can do. Is that me? I think this is still going, yeah? Cool. No, we don't start with all that amazing person that you are as a leader. You've been chosen. We start with you as a person. What are you like deep down within? Who are you? Who are you becoming? What's your character like? How are you allowing God to shape you deep within? What sorts of people make leaders? Is it the amazingly gifted people? 2,000 years ago, Jesus was looking to recruit leaders for his new venture. And he engaged Jordan management consultants to report on the applications for his positions. Here is their report to Jesus, to Mr. J. Christ. Dear sir, thank you for submitting the resumes of the 12 people you're considering for leadership positions in your new organization. All of them have now taken our battery of tests and undergone personal interviews with our vocational psychologist. In our view, most of your nominees lack the background, education, and vocational aptitude for your enterprise. Simon Peter is emotionally unstable and given to fits of temper. Andrew shows absolutely no qualities of leadership. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, place personal interest above company loyalty. Thomas demonstrates a questioning attitude that would tend to undermine morale. Matthew has been blacklisted by the Jerusalem Better Business Bureau, while James, the son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot have radical leanings. Thaddeus is oversensitive. One other candidate, however, shows a great potential. He's a man of ability and resourcefulness, engages well, has a keen business mind, and has contacts in high places. He's highly motivated, ambitious, and responsible. We recommend Judas Iscariot as your finance controller and right-hand man. Sincerely yours, Jordan Management Consultants. Who would you have chosen to be the leaders to go out and explode the good news of Jesus in the world? Would you have chosen the one, the highly gifted one, Mr. Iscariot? Jesus chose very ordinary people. Very ordinary people. And look at the work that they did in the world. So look around here tonight at C3. I see an amazing array of very ordinary looking people. You're incredibly ordinary. So I've got good news for you. There's a lot that you can do. Turning to the scriptures, and I'm going to look at a story from way back in the book of Genesis. The story of Joseph. It's a great epic about a great leader. It's more than 10 chapters of the Bible, huge chunk given to this, mainly to this one character. If you haven't read the story of Joseph, read it. And don't read two verses a day. It'll take you to Christmas next year to get through it. Read it as almost a novel, which it almost is. Joseph's story is one of a spoilt brat in a family torn apart by strife. Although the central character, Joseph, brings a lot of the trouble on himself, he's nevertheless treated badly. He's given a hard time. He comes up against everything. Through all of that, he develops into a mature and a very significant, competent leader, who in the end repays his family with grace, care, love, compassion. It's kind of a feel-good story about a bad boy who's made good. It's an account full of intrigue, deception, murderous intent, reconciliation, and warmth. I'm going to read some of it to you, but let's just set the scene. As I said, Joseph was a spoilt brat. He got right up the noses of his older brothers. Was it Telltale? Told them his amazing dreams, where he was a huge character, great person, and they had to bow down to him. That was his dreams. Have you had any dreams like that? Have you shared them with your brothers and sisters? Doesn't do you good. They sold him off to a bunch of slave traders, and he ended up working for an Egyptian official miles from home. I'm going to read to you from Genesis chapter 39. And I'm going to read the story of Joseph, or Joe, as he gets his first job and he gets framed. And I'm reading from the Kiwi Bible, which for those who weren't here this morning, it's a slightly informal paraphrase of some scriptures. Joe started his new job with Potiphar, the president's chief of staff. Potty was a very smart bloke. All the sandwiches were in his picnic. And he noticed that Joe had God helping him to do a fairly good job of everything. So Potty made Joe his chief of staff and got him to run the whole domestic shooting box. And wouldn't you know it, all Potty's stuff did well, home, paddocks and all. In fact, all Potty had to do was decide what he'd have for a feed each day, which is not too bad a way to have your life organised. Now, Joe was a bit of a hunk. Potentially a real stud, and Potty's missus wasn't blind. "Hey, gorgeous," he said, "how about a bit of a tumble in the hay, hey, what?" "Get lost," he told her, as politely as he could. "Potty trusts me and stuck me in charge of everything, except you, of course, because you're his wife, and I'm not going down that track, and for sure, God would agree on that particular one." That wasn't good enough for Mrs. Potty, no sir. She flirted with him outrageously every day. But he was too smart to fall for that carry-on. However, one day when Joe was working away in the house, none of the other staff happened to be around. "Hey, boyo, now's our chance," said Mrs. Potty, grabbing him by the jacket. Well, Joe took to his heels and got out of there quick smart, leaving her hanging on to his jacket. That was the last straw for her in terms of rejection. She yelled out, "Help! This foreigner turns up here, and before you know it, he tries to have me." When I yelled out, he took off, leaving his jacket. When Potty got home from work, the missus told him the same story. "That foreign bloke you hired tried to have me. I yelled out for help and he scarpered, leaving me holding his jacket." Well, did Potty hit the roof? The missus had told the story, when he heard the story. He threw Joe straight in the can, tossing him in with all those guys that had fallen out with the president. They were some of the most high-profile prisoners around. And you know what? God still thought Joe was all right, even in jail. God greased up, as it were, to the prison guard to get him on good terms with Job, which he did. So the guard made Joe sort of CEO of that part of the jail, which meant the guard had no worries, he could trust him. And God was solid with Joe. Whatever he did, no worries on that score. So that's from the Kiwi Bible. I have a few copies with me for sale. If you feel you'd like to read the Bible that way rather than those other old ways, the boring way, the other ways. And it's $25, and it's two volume. If you want to buy two volumes, bits of the Old Testament, bits of the New Testament, $30 for them all, and I'll take cash or Visa or MasterCard. Pretty cool, eh? So see me afterwards if you want to see the scriptures as Kiwis have them. Anyhow, Joe, product of a dysfunctional upbringing by a lying, cheating father. And here he is, a slave. It'd be so easy to blame his father for the way he turned out. Blame his brothers for the way they were cruel to him, and blame his father for spoiling him rotten. Any of you ever seen the musical Joseph and His Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat? Yeah. Great story. Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber. Be easy for me to say I am what I am because of what happened to me in my past, what others did to me, the unkindnesses I received. My parents weren't perfect. I've got every excuse to not take the opportunities that God places in front of me because of what's been done to me. They stuffed up my life. Have you heard this line? Have you maybe even said that or thought it yourself? Because of what's happened to me, I can't do much good. I can't take these opportunities. I've been spoiled. There's some truth in it. Joseph's father, Jacob, deceived his own brother for an inheritance, and then he shows such a crass and horrendous favoritism to his youngest son. The other kids in the family grow up bitter, murderous, dishonest. They've grown up a wee bit like the old man. But that's not the whole story. While our background and family does have an impact on us, we are all influenced. God has created us, you and me, as responsible human beings. My sin is my sin. My reactions are my responsibility. And secondly, we are subjects of God's mercy. Our lives are shaped by our past, but not just. Also by our present and by God's amazing grace, God's love and mercy, and how open we are to receive that. Many years back, a bank in New Zealand, the Post Office Savings Bank, which later became part of ANZ, they had a slogan: today is the first day of the rest of your life. What an incredible line of hope for any of us. A slogan which I think was slightly wasted on the bank, which disappeared. But I'm still here, and I'm grateful for what God has taken me through when I've known that wherever I've been, however tough life might have been at times, a lot of hope and encouragement, because God has taken me each day for the rest of my life from there. I know a guy who will never be a leader of a great enterprise. He can't feed or shower or dress himself. He can scarcely read. Last Sunday, he came to my church in Auckland and spoke at all three services through the day. He's spoken to schools and churches in New Zealand, conferences, parliamentarians, internationally and across New Zealand. He could complain about his major disability since birth. Instead, he makes the most of his opportunities from his wheelchair. He lives a great life. There's no one in the world who's sold as much chocolate as he has. He sold tens of thousands of bars of chocolate from his wheelchair. And in the New Year's honours, just a few years ago, Her Majesty awarded him with a Queen's Service Medal for his efforts fundraising for World Vision. I'm proud of this leader, my son Mark. He inspires me. He is a leader in his own way, using what God has given him and not complaining about what he can't do, but taking the opportunities of what he can. Back to Joseph. Every reason to turn out a failure because of what happened to him. But instead, here he is in jail. Instead of thinking, woe is me, this is the end of the line. He is a good and reliable and faithful worker. And so the boss in the jail promotes him right up the pecking order as a trusted prisoner. So this is before jail, in the household where he's working, in the Potiphar's household. And then he's confronted by this gorgeous temptation in the form of Mrs. Potiphar. It's clear from the passage that this wasn't the first time that she tried to seduce Joseph. And it's highly likely she'd had a few other blokes on the side. We get something of her personality. Finally, her patience wears out. They're alone in the house. Probably Joseph tried to avoid those sorts of situations, knowing what she was like, and she grabs hold of him. He flees with no hope now of what she was wanting being realized. She turns to retaliation and revenge. And she gets racist too. She says to her husband, that foreigner, that Hebrew. When Potiphar gets home, of course he's pretty unhappy about what's gone on, and Joe gets stuck into jail. Now, some interesting features about that. In those days, if a slave was caught raping the woman of the household, he could expect to have a part of his anatomy removed surgically. Probably his head, not what you were thinking. But Potiphar didn't execute him. He probably knew what his wife was like, and he had seen the trustworthiness of this guy, Joe. Trustworthy even when he wasn't really on show. He needn't have acted like a leader, but he did. He acted with integrity. So Joseph was sent to jail, and he seemed to go to the kind of higher-up jail reserved for slightly better class of criminals, however you assess that. I suppose if I had to go to jail, and apart from being a visitor, jail visitor, I haven't yet, but I'd prefer the business class jail. I think it'd be a bit more appropriate for the kind of person that I am. Sadly, all too many of God's people through history have lacked the strength of character that Joe showed. He was determined not to betray his boss. He was determined to stick with godly values. Virginia, in our series here on leadership, she talked about the integrity. Integrity is an interesting word. If you remember back to your maths days, I think an integer was a whole number or something. Integrity means whole, complete, not just the bits that show, whole. Nathan talked of self-leadership, being consistent in our personal and public lives. It's very easy to be a wonderful Christian leader in a church when you're up front, you're leading worship, you're leading a small group, you're leading two or three others in a group, and it's very easy to show your good side then and have people looking up to you, respecting you. But what are you like inside? King David, sometime down the track from Joseph, great king, he was tempted by the sight of a gorgeous chick who was sunbathing. So what did he do? He had all power. He arranged for her better half to get killed off so that he could have her supposedly, legitimately. He almost got away with it, except God saw what was going on and sent the prophet Nathan to sort him out. David was incredibly humbled through that. In churches around Christchurch, New Zealand, the world, every year, every month, every week, there are leaders, good Christian leaders, who are giving in to temptation and getting into inappropriate relationships. The consequences can be devastating for families, for ministry. They can be destructive to the church. In the New Zealand Herald last weekend, there was a double page feature about three national leaders of the Assemblies of God movement through the 70s, 80s, 90s, involved in inappropriate sexual behaviour. Two of them involved in criminal behaviour with minors. The consequences of leaders, pastors, behaving in that sort of way can be enormous. It can be devastating on a congregation when the person that has led you and led you wisely and been a great Christian leader, when they get caught out, it can negate in you all the good that God has done through them. You can mistrust everything that they've done, even though they've done a lot of good. The higher you go in leadership, sometimes the greater the challenges and the bigger crash when you fall. Satan tempts those all the more who can have a bigger devastating impact when they fail. Our sinful actions have consequences, whoever we are. For us, for those who love us, and for those that we lead. And it's not just about sex. There's plenty of other sins and traps we can fall into. Richard Foster wrote the book a number of years ago called Money, Sex and Power. And those are the major areas in those departments where we can be tripped up. So money, we all know about that. I talked to my friend in that category. Sex, power. People who enjoy the power that they can have over those that they lead. And we need to be careful as followers how much power we give to those who lead us. Do we always wait for their word on what we are to do? Or do we listen to God talking in the still small voice? Money, sex, and power, three major sin areas that can spoil our leadership. Now maybe this is a little out of context in the story which we're looking at of Joseph, because he didn't fall from grace because of what he actually did. He fell from grace for what he actually didn't, which makes it even worse for him, doesn't it? How does it affect you? How does it affect me? Watch your step. care for one another, watch out for one another. Do you have an accountability relationship with someone who is looking after your best interests? Are you part of a small group? Are you part of a group of two, prayer partnership? If we keep ourselves accountable to our Christian brothers and sisters, they are part of whom God has given us. We have a direct line with God, but we also have been put in community. As for Joseph, for the right prat that he had been as a teenager, just an unpleasant brother to have, telling tales, flaunting his amazing coat and his dreams, which put him in a top-notch position. He wasn't smart enough to keep that to himself. So he'd been a pretty awful character, but when Mrs. Potiphar comes on to him, he now shows his strength of character that God has been building in him. So Joseph must have done some good stuff along the way. He didn't have any men's group, no church network. He was a slave. He was owned by someone. He could have thought, this is going to be a bit of fun. No one needs no. But he stood firm. He held to his godly values without anyone there to help him. We can be challenged, and at times we can be a bit alone, where we don't have someone maybe to call on. We should try and have those relationships, those accountability, but sometimes it's going to come down to me. What am I going to do? No one's going to see what I get up to. I can get away with this. Can't get away from God. Joseph stood firm. We haven't got to the end of the Joseph story. If you've never read it, read on. It goes up and down, up and down. And he spends a long time in jail before eventually becoming the right-hand man to the Pharaoh, basically prime minister of all of Egypt. All his experiences, including his own stupidity and what others did to him, they become very significant in his future leadership. So you and I have stuffed up along the way. Well, I have. I suspect most of you have, your Christchurch people. I know you lot. We've all stuffed up. Are we going to give up and say, I can't be much use? Or are we going to take the opportunities that God continues to put in front of us as we take the first day in the rest of our lives? For Joseph, he became a significant leader internationally, caring for other countries round about as a big famine hit. And in a personal sense, there was wonderful reconciliation with his own family. And for some of us, that may be something that God wants us to do. The term wounded healer is a term created by Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist. And it's the title of a book by one of my favourite writers, Henri Nouwen, who passed away a few years ago. Nouwen was an outstanding Christian academic, theologian, thinker, writer, very brainy man. He was a man who had his own struggles in life, some of which related to his sexual identity. A man who lived as a leader, as a servant. For the last 10 years of his life, he stepped right out of academia and the prestigious positions that he'd had, and he worked as a caregiver for profoundly disabled young people in Canada. A leader who served. Listen to these statements by the colleagues of a wannabe leader. These are true statements about someone who wanted to be leader. He's the life and soul of the party, but he's not the man you want driving you home at the end of the evening. Or, He's a man who waits to see the way the crowd is running and then dashes in front and says, "Follow me." Would you hire him? Well, the British public voted for him, and Boris Johnson, of whom I've just spoken, is now the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. What sort of a leader is that? May God use him in ways that are not evident from some of his past. Are you like Boris or Joseph or maybe Bella or Joanne? Whatever has been, whatever you have done, whatever's been done to you, today is the first day of the rest of your life. There are exciting possibilities with God. Whatever has been before. Joseph, a hell of a life in so many ways. And look at the impact that he made, each of us, in the place God has placed us, can make a difference for his glory. We can lead in the space that we've been given. I was suggesting to John T. earlier, where it says lead up on the wall behind me, I said you could add to it, lead, follow, or get out of the way. It's not a very nice thing to say to you, is it, as your guest? There are times when we follow. There are times when we lead. God's given us each gifts where he expects us to lead. If you don't do what you've been called to, what you've been gifted for, you're letting God's side down. Let's pause and pray. Reflect on your past, the pain that you've received, the hurts that you've endured at the hands of others, or the way things have happened to you. How are you handling these? Are you stewing in them? Are you reveling in them? Can you bring these to God, who loves you deeply, to receive his healing touch? God can help you to forgive those who have hurt you. And that can be a long process. It's not always instant. Good things take time. Maybe your parents have hurt you. Maybe your siblings. Maybe someone else has let you down. What about the hurts that you've dealt to others by your behaviour, your words, your attitudes? God offers forgiveness and a way for you and me to be the person, the leader that God longs for us to be. Loving God, my life is in your hands. The bad, the sad, the good, the future. Please provide for me those who will help me to keep on the straight and narrow. Help me to serve my brothers and sisters too, because they want to walk with you. Make us people of integrity, people of character, people of wholeness. Lead us into the places where we will lead your people and where we lead people to Jesus. We pray in his name, empowered by the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. To learn more about our church, visit c3chch.org.